Welcome to the Valley Outdoors, everybody. Glad to have you guys with us. Don is here.
I'm here.
Dave is here.
I'm here as well.
And I am here. I'm Eric. I'm the host of the Valley Outdoors. We're glad to have you guys with us. We're going to have lots of, I think it's going to be fun stuff to talk about today. We've got a little bit of conversation talking about a change in the limits on the Lac, Don. We pushed on this for a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Both sides of the story. We've got a kind of the results of some of the pushes that we put in and a lot of other people as well. That, we're going to talk sunscreen. Lots of cool stories coming up. You're going to want to stay tuned. Be right back.
Avid outdoorsmen know that heading to the field without all the advantages, not a good idea. Most importantly, a stable shooting platform. Having the right platform can be critical to success. Field Optics Research is the industry leader, offering the most advanced, lightest, and stable tripods on the market. It's stability you need when that once-in-a-lifetime shot is in your crosshairs. Field Optics, the ultimate tripod for hunting, shooting, long-range precision shooting, spotting scopes, and outdoor photography.
Links to Field Research Optics available on thevalleyoutdoors.com.
Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors radio show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference. Well, it's good to see you guys back in the studio.
Always good to be seen.
Yeah, then viewed.
Yep. Yeah, in our case, viewed as well. Yeah,
exactly.
You know, maybe one of these days we'll take the leap and do this Facebook Live or something.
Yeah, stream. I'd like that. That'd be fun.
You would?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd be all over that.
All right.
Why not? I got a couple of buddies in South Dakota that do it.
Yeah.
That do radio broadcasts that does that. So
yeah.
Nothing wrong with that at all. We're so entertaining, I'll have to dress differently instead of my bathrobe.
Well, I was going to suggest...
But last week, I was fortunate enough to be at Devil's Lake, North Dakota. We talked a little bit with Kyle from the Woodland Resort up there. Had a great time. And, you know, Devil's Lake, you know, from the interview, if you guys didn't listen to it, check it out. Last week's interview, it was very... it was an education. I don't know if you listened, Don. But
I didn't get a chance.
There was a lot that he talked about as far as the fishery, the change, what's going on with the fishery. So really what I wanted to do is get a flavor, everybody that's listening, get a flavor of what Devil's Lake has been and where it's at now. And it's pretty incredible because when I first started going there with the walleye tour, it was first year that it had actually flooded or had gotten to the closer to the water level we're at right now. And you were fishing flooded cattails and lead core. I mean, and that's in cattails. That was a swamp. So a lot of the things that we look at, whether it's farm tractors or grain silos that are in water and you're catching fish out of those, it's just a whole different fishery. So moving forward to what we were doing out there, bottom bouncers and spinners were the key. It really worked quite well. We varied the spinners, though, I will tell you that. We went from some very small spinners, metal. I went to my go-to Mac twin blade spinners because you just have a confidence when you won big tournaments, multiples, and were done well in them with them in that area. Your tendency is to have a go-to, and unbelievable how well it worked. It was just really an important piece of it. We mixed between crawlers and leeches, which was, I'm not one that would normally switch. I know a slow death and a night crawler are pretty hard to beat, but yeah, a couple of days the leeches or the crawlers weren't going, and the leeches just.
Yeah, see, I'm a leech guy. I mean, I'll go with leeches over crawlers any day.
Yeah, the reason I don't is the usual access to leeches.
This can be tough.
It could be very difficult. And if I can know how to set up for a crawler bite, you can make it work with even a worm if you have to.
Right.
But one of the the things that when you're out there, one of the areas we fished was called the Golden Highway. The Golden Highway is actually a highway that is actually, it's a high road under the water. And when you're bottom bouncing, you're actually bottom bouncing on top of, on pavement. And you've got to be very aware that speed consistency is important. Otherwise, that hook will drop down and will, on occasion, stick. And when it gets sticking to pavement, it doesn't come out very easily at all.
Oh, really?
Oh, no. It seems to want to stay.
Pavement's just flat.
With a lot of cracks and stuff in it.
Oh, okay.
So getting that into it.
It's probably got some sticks and stuff like that.
Well, primarily it's pavement. It's chunks, right? So that was one thing on the highway. We, you know, you work the highway, you've got more aggressive fish that are going to be in the top. You're going to work the edges if you want to catch some, you know, if you're not getting them on the top. Another section, a lot of different hump areas. So we just happened upon a hump, tried it, and it was off of the area that used to be wooded. It wasn't, it was relatively close to it. And I'm thinking, this is going to be a challenge. And I'm looking at the graph and I went, oh, this is not good. Okay, everybody raise your lines up. And then we get over it and then we drop back down. And consistency again is speed is important, because if you stall the speed, that hook's going to drop. Mm-hmm. Well, there, if the hook drops, you're hooking whatever wood is laying down. And it's definitely a change in that fishery from when way back when we were there, because of the ice and everything else pushing and breaking off those trees. And when you look at that piece of the puzzle, that's where I didn't have a nightcrawler blower. I wish I would have, and I would have blown that up and created an elevation. But putting a float on a leech, that helped a lot. So really being able to keep that bait up. And
did you lose many rigs?
Don, I lost more rigs in one day than I lost in probably the last 10 years, and I'm not lying. I bet I broke off 15 times in a matter of 3 hours.
Takes a while to tie that many.
And I'm running two rods.
Maybe you should just run.
Was a headache.
Maybe you should just run one and pay attention.
No. I refuse to. I'm stubborn and I'm Norwegian, yes. So there you go. But it was a good time. We tried some other spots, passed through the casino, a couple bridges, spot I'd never fished, came up on it. The guys are giving me grief. Hey, if we wanted to go for a boat ride, I would have paid for one, you know, all that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I said, look, I'm trying to find spots for everybody. We came on a spot. We came up 19, 21, 19, 18, 18, 17, 18 inchers, and they got real quiet real quick.
Sure.
And day we left, 25 to 35 mile an hour, gusting to 45. So timing was perfect. Speaking of timing perfect, end of my story, we're going to come right back. We're going to talk a little bit about what's going on in Mille Lacs and other stories. Hang tight. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. I'd like to have you guys check us out. Where, Ava?
TheValleyOutdoors.com.
And Don?
TheValleyOutdoors.com.
No, that'd be Facebook, Don.
I know it would be Facebook.
Boy, oh boy.
But I thought I'd get a double hit there.
A double hit?
Yeah.
Double dip.
Double dipping.
double dipping.
Yep, both of them. Interactive map on the Valley Outdoors. It's really pretty awesome. If you haven't checked it out, check it out. And the DNR, whatever state you're looking for, whether it's a game, fish, and parks, whatever they want to call themselves for the regulatory commission for wildlife in whatever state you're looking for, they will be there, and activities galore, as they say. Speaking of DNR, I know, Don, you've always kind of, you're kind of razzing me whenever I bring up a story on Mille Lacs. But this year we did do a nice job of getting both sides of the story. Agree.
Yeah.
And we had people on from the advisory council, the owner of Tut's Bait, talked a little bit about that side of the fence, what's going on with the local businesses, why is this not changing as far as limits, how did they come up with this crazy limit that they have now. And then we got the Great Lakes specialist for Mille Lacs last week, and we talked about
a couple weeks ago, I think.
A couple weeks ago, my apologies. Yeah, a couple weeks ago. And so we did get both sides of the story. Now, the turn of the worm, as the saying goes, one of the comments that came up on our conversation was, well, they need 60 days to make the change. And, you know, we were looking at the limits and, you know, we can't really do anything. It's too late for that. And all of a sudden it comes to just this last week. And now the announcement from the Minnesota DNR, they're planning on having a limit of two beginning August 16th. So they've opened it up, and angling pressure was 1/3 of the projected amount, and the walleye take that was right about 26% of the allowable state angler kill.
for when?
For the season. The walleye take was just over 26%.
When was there a walleye take?
Well, they go by measurable mortality.
Okay. So people that have caught fish and they did not survive.
Right. So.
And they base that on water temperature and.
Exactly. And so they told members of the Lake Mille Lacs Fishery Advisory Committee on Monday, they're proposing beginning August 16th, the two fish harvest slot, 18 to 20 inches with one over 28 allowed in possession. So originally they planned for a one fish limit and a harvest slot of 21 to 23 inches. Brad Parsons, who's the DNR fishery manager, said there's still signatures that need to go onto documents. He said that's likely to occur this week. He said the new slot would be good for anglers, given that there are a lot of walleyes within that slot. It's expected that a night fishing closure at 10 p.m. will continue through August, followed by a midnight closure beginning in September. And, you know, Don, I think across the board, and I think my push for to be able to get people to hear what's going on, I think it's bringing a different amount of, I think it's going to change accountability on the DNR side. They can't just push through something that appears to be skewed for some reason and no good reason that we could come up with, that they could come up with, because there and it was brought up again, and they keep driving the message home that, well, the take for ice fishing was extremely high. And
we know that wasn't the case.
That's not the case. So really kind of odd from that side of the fence doesn't play. And, you know, you look at the harvest quotas, and I brought the graph down. I mean, look at from 93, and you go all the way out to 2015, 17, 19 was a high hooking mortality, but even out to here, it's minimal at best. So really, 2019 was one of the higher years of that.
So just to recap, the new limit as of the 16th of August is going to be two fish,
18 to 20 inches, and one over 28 inches.
So they got to be a minimum of 18.
18 to 20. Yep. If it touches the line on either, that's in.
One over.
If you go over 20 inches, that's not a valid fish. You have to throw it back. If it just touches, and you're honestly better off just staying under because somebody may measure a little differently than you do.
Yep.
Not really a good thing.
That would be the conservation officer.
Correct.
Yeah.
Parsons told members of the recent fall-winter catch rates, along with anticipated weather conditions, forced them to approach the open water fishing season with caution. But he said our fears of extra hot temperature did not materialize, which is good news in terms of hooking mortality. So the hooking mortality hooking mortality is down. If you're not aware, hooking mortality is if it's a catch and release, meaning if you catch a walleye or catch anything and you, whatever, get it in the boat, take a picture of it, throw it back in the water, there is a higher mortality rate come summer because the ability to get oxygen back after that fish bites to the boat to get that fish to recover. And that's one of the challenges. The bigger fish are more heavily impacted on that side of the fence than the smaller fish.
Mm-hmm.
They come in more quickly, the smaller fish do, and there's less bite that goes on. So really when it comes to that, he mentioned also the angler pressure was overestimated. According to them, the early walleye season pressure in May was 25% below what was expected. June and July pressure dropped even further to one-third of what was projected. So that's brings me to what you and I were talking on off air about. When you have a restrictive limit such as that, it's going to significantly impact that fishery as far as angler pressure. Because people are saying, well, I want to take something home. I'd like to, you know, I will say this. Right now, Mille Lac, in my mind, is probably going to be one of the premier walleye lakes. Always has been. But right now, it's crazy. The number of fish are being caught is off the charts. So I think the realistic piece of this comes into play. Is it become a self-fulfilling prophecy? They say, no, it's catch and release only. Well, then people aren't want to go. And then they're anticipating this super high catch rate when it's not happening. Because they put the restrictive, you know, chicken or the egg, maybe? Would you agree?
Well, if they're catching fish, they're more likely to be happy. But whether they're putting any in the live well, I think is what's being allowed now.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, if you look at angling pressure actually on Mille Lac, from 2023, the number went from 117,000 in 2023, the same period, estimated 86,000. Thousand anglers hours versus 117,000. So pretty significant reduction.
That doesn't even seem like that many hours on a body that size.
Yeah.
I mean, that lake is what? 18
that's
by
May,
18
May
by,
to the end of the month. So that's not the.
Well, that's for 1 month.
Yep.
Oh, gotcha.
So during the first 2 weeks in June, angler pressure estimated 107,000 hours. This year, 83. Open water season through July 15th, 368,000. This year, 263.
Okay.
So it's changed a lot. I think that's a piece for it.
I'd be interested to know how all of those statistics happen. I mean, do they actually have somebody standing at the launches?
No, they're actually going to – they have creel survey guys, and then they figure out – how many roughly people they think were there, and then they transpose that or
so it's an educated
articulate
guess.
That. And that's the problem that's going yeah, on right now.
Right.
Their educated guess is less than educated. And again, we talked about it. Officials said that contingency planning is complicated, meaning if you're catching fish or not catching the fish and the angler traffic is down, then what happens? It's complicated by the fact that the Ojibwe banned, they need 60 days notice. Well, you got to be more nimble in a situation like this to help the businesses that are struggling. And Parsons said he and a DNR staff deserve to shoulder responsibility because as one business owner on the lake said, they have now another lost season. And unfortunately, that's really part of it. Steve Johnson from Portside, he's been a big advocate of the lake. He was saying that the tribal and state officials review the data. They hammer out the details of upcoming fishing seasons for both parties. And he said, flat out, number one, mistake number one, weak negotiations.
Yeah, well.
So sad but true. But, hey, guess what? You can keep two. How'd you like that?
That's a 100% improvement over what they thought it was going to be.
I would absolutely 100% agree. Good news coming out of Michigan, Don.
Yes.
It is a big deal. Boat fatality numbers that are an all-time low in Michigan. We like to hear that. Usually, they're looking at They said roughly since 1971, there are more than 20 fatalities annually for every 100,000 registered voters. Current figures are less than 5 voting-related deaths per 100,000. Quite a drop and a big improvement, which is great. That's more than twofold increase in voting, but a 75% drop in voting fatalities. So great job in Michigan. You guys are doing a super job out there. Big part of it is flotation devices. They're cracking down on boating, drinking, consumption of alcoholic beverages to the point of having it be an issue is part of it. Collisions weren't, but it's always the alcohol and falling in at some point and drowning.
Right.
So collisions were not even a smidgen of that piece of the puzzle. So good news and great job. Kind of a cool deal. Unfortunately, I read an article. It was in 2023. Wisconsin's boat fatalities were up. They had 23 boating fatalities in 2023. Numbers for 24 are not out yet. So I'm not sure what the difference there is, but we'll stay on top of that and see how that fares. But now let's jump into something that all of us are exposed to, shall we say.
Sure.
The sunscreen, what is it? And I thought it was appropriate because, man, I'll tell you what. I was in South Dakota. It was sunny, hot, and...
I thought you were in North Dakota.
Oh, I was in North Dakota, wasn't I? Not South Dakota.
Where was I?
Where was I? I don't know.
We'll help them out, Ava.
Forget. Yeah. They're in... It was in North Dakota. But anyway, the sun's out. The wind is blowing. You don't think it's that big a deal with the sun.
It can be cloudy.
It could be cloudy.
Yes.
But when it's sunny out, you don't think of it because you're comfortable.
Cool. Yeah.
It's, you know, but applying... sunscreen is a big part of it. And, you know, you were asking me, you know, what is the rating thing? And it's called SPF. And what SPF is, it's a measurement of how much UV radiation is needed to produce sunburn and compared to unprotected skin. And that's the SPF rating scale. So as the SPF value increases, sunburn protection increases. So the higher level SPF you find on a sunscreen, the more that it will protect you. That's pretty simple, right? Way back, I think it was probably 5 years ago, they had ratings of sunscreen. It was, hey, 75 SPF 75, but it really wasn't 75. So the FDA stepped in and they changed it. So you had, if you had 75 on it, it had to be verified that it was going to be
provide that type of protection.
Exactly correct. So what it comes down to, an hour of sun exposure at 9 a.m. is equivalent to 15 minutes of sun exposure at 1 p.m. How about that?
Say that again.
An hour of exposure at 9 a.m. is equivalent to 15 minutes of sun exposure at 1 p.m.
Right.
Sun angle, all that comes into play. So that's really kind of the
that's why it gets really hot around noon.
Between 10 and 4, that's the strongest. Yeah, exactly right.
You kind of go with the temperature on that.
So really what it comes down to is UV and how that's exposed. How do I measure sunscreen? This is a tough part about it. And again, this is going to be two parts. We're not going to go the whole thing. We're going to be two parts talking about this because it's relatively in-depth. I'm going to keep it high level. 2 milligrams of sunscreen to each square centimeter of skin can be a tricky task. Well, guess what? The important thing for me is, and I think we all, when you put sunscreen on, Ava, you just put it on, rub it in, and just make sure you didn't miss a spot, right? So that's really the key piece to it, making sure you have that on. And they say, dermatologists say rule of nines. It uses teaspoons in place of milligrams. You know what? Comes down to it. Make sure you have coverage. Make sure you have a specific SPF. If you're susceptible to sun, higher. If you want a tan, obviously, you can go lower.
Isn't there like a cutoff though? Like, don't they say anything above SPF 50 is, it's the same?
I'm getting to that. So automatically the end use SPF is going to be lower than the labeled SPF because it's inadequately applied. You're not able to put on enough. So they recommend 30 as a starting point. If used correctly, would filter out 90 97% of the UVB rays, which is what you want to eliminate, and that's associated with skin burning. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So that process, you have to make sure you put it on correctly, and a slightly higher SPF would compensate for under application. So if you don't put it on right or put enough on, or if it sweats it off during the day, if it, you know, if it's not,
mm-hmm. not if it's properly hot, added, yeah, yeah. Yep.
Put so on. Best sunscreen for the face and body, lotion, cream, gel, oil, spray, whatever. They can be used on any part of the body, but lotion, creams, and oils are getting better suited for the face because aerosol products, they irritate the eyes, nose, and lungs. Now, I will take my glasses off, my hat off, and spray my face with that. Mainly reason is I'm a fisherman and trying to, okay, now I'm going to wash my hands with soap that doesn't scent. I like the spray. I really do. And you just hold your breath, point yourself into the wind, and don't get your spray near the graph. If you get sunscreen on your graph or your gauge package.
Or your sunglasses exactly, or anything like
it
that.
It will really cause you some problems.
Well, it also gets it back on your hands again.
Exactly right. So go for the spray if you don't have anything else to use. If you want to make sure you get the coverage, the spray does well because you don't miss spots you normally would trying to apply it with that kind
I've
of thing.
Noticed, though, that I have to rub it in, though. Even though I've sprayed my face, like, I still have to rub it in for it to actually work for
I
me.
I don't. It has a carrying material that will get it dispersed and absorbed.
Sure.
So, but hey, stay tuned. We're going to be talking about more next week. But that's all for the sunscreen story for this week. Don, Ava, thanks for coming on. Appreciate you guys being here. We are the Valley Outdoors. I'm Eric. Thanks for joining us. See you next week. Thank you.